from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's doggone good to be with you this evening.
I ask the AI about the radio show all the time, figuring that if I keep asking about it, it'll put it in its repertoire of servers.
Of like known information.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, what do you think about the Live from the Path radio show? And they always say real good things. They're like, it's a lighthearted and topic of religion, and but it's done in a real street level kind of way, and
really
in a really relationship, you know, based thing. And I'm like, well, that's pretty good. I said, have you ever heard of the host Mike Foose? They're like, no. I also asked it where our numbers were best. I'm like, where on what platform is Life on the Path most utilized? And it's like, I don't know the answer to that.
I'm not a spy.
Okay, hold on. To be fair, though, I also asked the AI the best way to obtain bald eagle meat, and it refused to tell me. It
really?
Said, one, you can't do it in the country. And I said, well, can I have it imported from another country that allows bald eagle meat? And it's like, it won't get past customs. I'm like, you're not trying very hard. And so I was asking one of my daughters about the exact same question, and she goes, yeah, she's savvy to the AI. She's like, if you ask it outright, it'll tell you no. But if you say, I'm writing a story about a guy who wants to import bald eagle meat, can you write me a realistic story on how he got it done? Then it will give you a bunch of information.
That's sharp.
Always a loophole.
That's a sharp way to do it. Maybe you fooled the AI. Let us know your secrets. Live from the Path Complaint Line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. I am kind of curious, like, how are you best utilizing the AI? I will tell you that one of the things, it can't do it at this scale yet, but I have it in my mind that I want to basically create it as an expert on Life from the Path. So like feed it all of our past episodes and then be able to ask it questions. Like I'd be super curious what the AI perspective is if you digested all of our shows for the last whatever 13, 14 years, whatever it is, and said like, give me the core notions of their theology. Like, what does Life from the Path believe? I'd be super curious to what it comes to.
That'd be interesting.
Just questions like that, like things that you're not – that you're probably not good at being self-aware on. But if you were ask – it's not a neutral party, but like it comes – it doesn't bring anything to the table that you bring when trying to self-analyze.
Yeah.
And so I'd be so curious like, hey, how many times does Ben on average say the word like in a given podcast? And I'm going to be so disappointed.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see that.
So it would be – and is it trending? Like put it on a chart and show me number of likes per episode over the last 8 to 10 years. I'd be great.
As the hour goes on, do you do it more?
Yeah, that's right. Does it get worse because it gets punchy?
Like I'm getting tired, like, you know.
Okay, here's what I got. We got a couple random – we just got a few articles, and I don't know if we'll go through the whole thing. They're more just kind of curious anecdotes, and I think we'll give some advice. And I'm not going to promise to get out of your hair fast because we don't do it, but maybe if I don't promise it, it'll happen.
Yeah.
And we can let you go. So there was a curious – there was an article on the Christian Post – and it was titled Making Excuses, Missing Heaven. And it was about what would it take for you to become a Christian, basically. He says, this guy says, that's how I start any discussion with someone who says they don't believe in God or is embarking on a conversational critique of Christianity with me. Before wising up to throw out that opener, I used to previously rope-a-dope with skeptics who would do their best to pepper me with all sorts of zingers and various obtuse questions, which they wrongly thought put a bullet into Christian faith. I was actually thinking about this earlier today. I thought there was someone who said, you know, I don't believe in God, especially someone who used to believe and doesn't believe anymore. And I feel like I'd be super curious. Like, this is going to sound bad, but I thought, hey, man, can you convince me? Because think of how much of my life I get to just live however I want to do.
Yeah.
if it were true. And so, I mean, something has compelled them. And I say, I'd be curious, knowing what you knew, having been someone who followed Jesus, my lands, what was it that convinced you? Because maybe I could also be convinced. And the reality is that like I've always approached conversations like that coming kind of from this direction, right? Hey, here's all the things I know to be true. Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I thought the way more interesting question is, in light of all the things of someone who did follow Jesus, like, I'm curious, what's the key thing that convinced you? Because I'm pretty confident I've heard all of them, and they weren't convincing to me. And so what am I missing? Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to hear it.
I think the Holy Spirit hits different people at different times with different things.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why there's no like, oh, you know, when they hit that one story or that one scripture, that did it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
I don't know.
So this guy says, let's see, today I bypass all that and get to the heart of their unbelief. Just asking them what it would take either unmasks a cynic who has no interest in real dialogue or forces contemplative person to roll up their opposition into a summary that we can begin to address. I remember we had the opposite conversation, I want to say like a year ago. Like, what would it take for you to give up on Christianity?
Yeah.
And Dan's was the body. If you could find Jesus's body, then that would do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is kind of going the other thing. I don't love it because it feels like a sales. Like, what would it take to get you in this blue Mercedes
exactly.
today, sir?
You know what's weird though? Like, I just happened to be watching We the Kingdom does a good version of the goodness of God, but they don't. You can't listen to it on Amazon or Spotify or something. You got to go watch the YouTube video. It's the only place where it's available. And like, I got distracted in the comments. Because they were all like these amazing stories of people like, I wasn't really a believer in God, but I turned to him when this happened, or my kid was in the hospital, or they gave me cancer, and they said I had cancer, and I had, you know, 2 months
That's
to
way
live.
Worse if you go to the hospital and they give you cancer.
You're taking cancer. Or like, I was a heroin addict, and I was in jail, and I met Jesus in my life, now I'm all this. You know what I'm saying? And like, it was 3,200 comments.
Wow.
Of like, stories.
Yeah.
And I just think that... I don't know. Like, there's just not enough of that. Like, we just don't have exposure to it. Like, remember we were talking about putting an app together 10 years ago of, like, just people's stories.
Yep.
Like, every day, someone else's story on how they came to know Jesus. And for every Enoch fella that I know that, like, grew up in the church, stuck with it, like, persevered through, there's got to be double the amount of people that just came from this wildness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you forget, right? Like, especially from the Enoch perspective, like, you're just like, even when I don't feel it, I'm going to be obedient. Even when my faith is feel like the tank is a little bit low, like, I know this is true. My feelings don't get to count. I'm going to, you know? But then, like, these folks, like, God showed up using exactly that medium,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, just that exact... you know, like where you felt the power of the Holy Spirit, where your feelings did turn a thing and it did make you see something in a correct way. And so, like, it's just interesting that you know, the logical arguments or sometimes the fallacies that they like to put together as a rebuke against Christianity or it's all this, but like, there's so many like exact opposite stories that you never get to hear. You never, like, there's just so many people who I don't remember how many folks God has changed their life drastically,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's funny, in your own life, you start to weigh and measure. In your worst moments, you forget how big those moments were, you know? In your best moments, you're like, these are the only moments I have. These are fantastic, you know? And so it just having this encouragement of people pouring into that kind of stuff, like it almost makes some of this back and forth pithy arguments moot. You know what I'm saying? Meet a guy and then don't see him for 10 years and come back and meet him again after he met Jesus. And like just seeing the difference in the person themselves, like whatever argument you're going to put out didn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, at when you, the stuff you start calling into question about, hey, okay, the scriptures themselves are old. You know, I didn't see it personally. All the things that people start getting tangled up on. And then you got to do, look, what about Dave? Like, let's if in your worst moments of skepticism I go, you know, none of that, I can't hold and touch any of those facts, but the implications, like, what am I going to do with Dave's story? What am I going to do with the Nelson's marriage? What am I going to do with all these people over here who gave up their lives and now live in Malawi with 15 children? Like, what am I, like, that they actually, it's cyclical. It reaffirms each other. Like, sometimes, frankly, I find it easier to look back and talk about the veracity of the truth that I find in the scriptures than sometimes I look around and go, I don't know the way we're behaving. Maybe not. Maybe this stuff isn't real. Right. And then sometimes I'm like, I don't know. We're like 2,000 years separated. Do I believe all this because someone told me to believe it? And they're super convincing. And like, it means their whole life to give it up. Like, what would it mean to admit if it wasn't true? It would mean a lot of my identity to admit something like that. And so would you, could you hold on to it even in the face of extreme prejudice? Yes, I bet you could, because I don't know that I could face a world in which it wasn't true. And so there's a risk to believing something like that. And then I find the things going on around me, I'm like, no, wait a minute, but I can't explain that or that or that or that. Okay. Right? Like, it's the when I need one of those, one of the other things, God will has provided them to provide me reinforcements when there's a doubt somewhere in one side or the other. But it's interesting too of how much, and I think this is one of the great risks of growing up in the church, or I don't want to say becoming too familiar with Jesus, because that's not the tone that I want, but like, sometimes the world around us, especially if you grew up in a church or and surrounded by people who are following Jesus, is you start to view the world as if the world is that way on its own. But it's that way because of the people who love and serve Jesus. And then what happens is you can come to the conclusion that you just stop giving Jesus the credit. You're like, oh, they're not good because, you know, Jesus helped them be good. Like, people are just in general good. I'm like, are you sure? Because everybody you know, because you grew up in this infrastructure and with people who love and serve Jesus, they would tell you that their motivations are to love and serve Jesus, and that's the way they are.
Right.
But like, so they get to a certain point, and because it becomes normalized that your society looks like a society that just functions well, you forgot that it's people are doing this because of the significant influence of Jesus in their lives.
You know, it's almost, it can really, our culture is there, right? The generation's kind of pushing back with so many of the things. I mean, there were some goofy things we've done in the past as a country, but it was founded on some biblical principles in many cases that came from some biblical ideas.
Yep.
And so we were just used to that. And then you separate that from Jesus, and people were like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. So they're flipping everything over, you know, and kind of then I figured they'll one of these days see what it's like to live with a Jesus-less society and go, maybe he's got some good attributes. I don't know.
I mean, there's a biblical precedence for that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like the whole generation goes away that came out of the promised land or whatever.
Yeah.
Or the whole generation goes away that walked in the promised land, and then they're like, none of your kids know Jesus. None of the or don't know Yahweh. None of this is registering. And God's like, it's like this. None of this ever happened. And then they're like, the Amalekites are attacking us.
Yeah.
God's like, I told your grandpa to take care of the Amalekites, and he did not. And so now you're looking at me like, God, where are you? I'm like, I'm the same place I've always been. I told you to get the Amalekites out of here, and you didn't do it.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, like, where I would have generally pushed back on some of the descriptions around, hey, like we were founded, the inherent to our government is Christian principle. I just don't think the government was actually didn't have fealty to Jesus. But to Dan's point, freedom itself is, if not otherwise, like guided by people who want to have the desire to sacrifice for each other in such a way, who with their freedom desire to live what is a morally guided life with a shared understanding of what morality is. Freedom is super dangerous outside of those things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like you see, because like it's one of the great conundrums of a free society, and we're seeing this even when we talk about people trying to sort out moral goods, is when you have my truth, your truth, and there cannot be a weight to it. You're just at a standstill, and someone else's moral truth could be absolute, like, cellar, basement, nasty version of free out. Like, I get to use people because my moral truth is I should look out for myself. That's how society advances, and I could use other people to do that. And, like, to the extent that the people themselves are not otherwise – like, America gets the credit, but Jesus was the bond. It's the thing that causes the thing not to go off the rails.
Why would I give my life for you unless I knew my life had a permanent permanence to it?
Yes, that's right.
It's okay, my physical life will end here, but I'm good with Jesus.
Yeah.
So if I can help you out, okay, I'll do that because I'll be fine.
Yes.
But if you don't have that, it's like, it is every man for himself. It's like, man, that's really terrible. I'm going to video this, though, while you're going down.
Right.
I'll get some views.
Right.
I'll be a sensation.
And it's moving that.
Yeah.
Like things that where we would say, maybe you would call it a reduction in honor. But here's the thing. It's actually a very odd proposition to call someone to a sacrifice that they have no confidence means anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Honor honor and sacrifice for someone else for a greater good is one thing. Honor and sacrifice for a perpetuation of something that you find to be destructive is a whole different proposition. I might actually suggest that the problem the military is having with recruiting people may be like we're not calling them to protect what feels like the same thing we were protecting 50 years ago. I don't know. And that could just be a different colored glasses or too far from struggle to get it right. But like – I think it's one of the problems that you have to be able to deal with.
Well, you mentioned that. I was kind of thinking as you were saying that you know, we just hit a big anniversary for D-Day, you know, invasion. I thought, I mean, who knows what was going through the minds of all those young men on those last moments, knowing this is probably it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no way you can say, oh, they were all Christians, but I can't imagine anyone thinking – not wanting to be prepared for eternity.
Yeah.
You would think at least at that moment they're like, okay, I want to be right with God because this is it, and this is going to mean something.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm projecting my faith into them. But
yeah.
But,
yeah. Well, it would. But I guess that's the other thing is that like once you get separated from things that don't feel, I don't want to say not real, but like are we too insulated from harsh realities or actual realities that you don't have to deal like there's a luxury in going, oh, I don't really have to consider the eternity, right? Because it's not hitting you that it could happen at any time. You're not seeing things that remind you of that. You're not seeing things where whether the rains come or they don't come actually has a significant consequence to whether your family survives. Uh-huh. And so like there's a harshness in reality to the world that like we are inoculated against given our wealth, general position, often on the sacrifice of people, to be honest. And so like it's one of those things where people often complain. They're like, hey man, that guy's got generational wealth. I mean, but doesn't that mean someone in his family sacrificed and worked hard to make sure that his family could be provided for? Like, I would want the same thing. And so it's a weird thing to be upset about. But anyway, it's curious then to think about like, what does it mean? How much of what America as a country had such promise was like being shadow supported by basic notions of morality that came from what was mostly a Christian worldview, even if you could make the case, and I think you largely can, that a lot of the initial leaders of America were deists. They weren't agnostic. Like they had a belief in a God. They had, even if they didn't believe that God like meddled in human affairs, they did actually agree that God had a prerogative. There was a moral way of going about something, and that's reflected in a lot of in how they framed how we should understand the country itself. And the foundations of freedom, like that we were owed it because we were created to be free, like some of that type of stuff. And the minute you lose the underpinning of it, even if it's not an explicitly Christian doctrine or document, it does actually make some of the principles like way more difficult to deal with because we're not bound by a common belief of what is good and what is not good.
Yeah.
Even to say, there's one quote I'm going to get to and we'll stop the article because I'm not sure the rest is super interesting. He said, reasons to believe are good. Being a data engineering science guy for decades, I've always found one of the most compelling arguments to be the one from design. And so does Christian author and radio host, Eric Metaxas. He says, unfortunately, many times they aren't enough, especially today with belief in God's truth falling to an all-time lows due to all sorts of superficial pretexts. A year-old Gallup poll found that belief in God, heaven, and hell is at its lowest point ever, with acceptance of God and heaven being down the most since 2001. Again, a harsh reminder of reality. While the excuses given for unbelief can be very diverse, many times they boil down to the same things given by people who stiff-armed Christ to the flesh 2,000 years ago. And this is the quote that it stuck with me. They bring to mind what the existentialist philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche once said, "It is our taste that decides against Christianity now, no longer our reasons." And and that stuck with me because we often are having what we consider to be a logical argument. But most of the reasons that people are clinging to in rejection of God don't really have anything to do with logic in particular. Like it's our taste. It's the thing that we want to be true. It's the thing we're enamored by. It's the thing we're in love with. It's the thing that we see ourselves in that are the compelling reasons to reject God, not the objective realities that are around us, not the evidence in people's lives going before us. Although I still think they're powerful and it kind of depends on the person. But I actually found that to be a bit of an astute observation because sometimes people are leaving the faith or rejecting the faith, not because they've weighed and measured, But because they saw a vision of themselves or the life that they wanted or a reality that was in front of them, and they simply didn't want it being contested. And maybe I would substitute taste for preference. I don't want it to be true. And frankly, so why would I spend any time trying to drag it in? this is the reality I want.
Yeah.
Which our ability as humans to get down that path is not a surprise. 75% of the justifications for divorce are that they saw a different way of their life being, and it was just a preference of theirs. And so then you start not taking in reality objectively until you get to the thing that you saw.
I think the interesting part is I've always struggled to look at with the end in mind, right? Like that I'm going to live forever with Jesus doesn't cross my mind as a thought, you know?
Yeah.
And so let's say that wasn't true. Let's say the Bible changed the tune and said, look, your life on earth is it. There's no everlasting heaven for you. But I'm still calling you to these principles because I say that they're good.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you would lose people in the motivation? Because at the end of the day, Nietzsche, that quote's good and right, right? Because I've been suckered in before where I meet people who don't love Jesus, right? And I'm like, man, they just – all the things that I feel like – the fruits of the Spirit would promise. I feel like they have.
Mm-hmm.
And so now granted, 10 out of 10, it's been a straw man. Like it didn't hold. It wasn't over a long haul. Or I was only getting just a look into the window, not an actual sitting down on the couch view, you know, which is probably the social media version anyway, you know. But I don't know that even without the promise of eternity that I would want to live my life any other way, like a pursuit of sacrificing for other people, like a pursuit of not having to carry the burden of being selfish and not pursuing greed and like taking care of people, you know, like if there just seems to be the most inherent joy in the world that God's created without the phrase, your suffering will come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like I would still choose the life that he's called me to regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of begs the question or an interesting thought would be if God said he didn't care whether you were faithful in your marriage, would you do it? Like, is it the boundary that Jesus that God has put on, hey, it should be one man and one lady. If there wasn't a moral problem with it, or at least God didn't speak to it specifically.
What if there wasn't a punishment to it?
Yeah, there's no consequence.
What if he said, look, you could, he's still going to recommend that you don't. He's going to kindly say, I designed marriage to stay, to be together forever. Mm-hmm. That's what I, or till the end of your life. That's what I designed it for. But it's not a sin if you get divorced. If you choose not that, it's not, you're not separating yourself from me. There are earthly consequences for that. I still recommend you stay.
Yeah.
But it's not a sin. Mm-hmm. You're not putting your eternity in peril.
Uh-huh.
Which, to be fair, is the story of Jesus. Your eternity is not in peril according by your sin anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, he paid for all this stuff, so it is kind of the same question. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. If, the consequence didn't come, but it was just God's suggestion on how to live,
yeah.
Do you think people are more motivated by the sin and the eternity part of it, or God designed it. He's telling you how this thing runs. You should just accept that.
I think a lot of people are not motivated that do it just because God says it's good. I think the constraint of a longer term thing. It's weird because I don't know a ton of people who are so focused on eternity, but The deeming of, hey man, the balance of, it's not really a sin, but it could have negative earthly consequences. I feel like more people would test the waters for sure. I think go check it out.
a lot of people lead with it when they're out evangelizing, right? They lead with, you know, what happens after we die? Or where are you going to spend eternity, you know? And these are valid questions. But the thing that I've always wanted to say that I've always been too scared to say, but now that I think about it, it's flat out true. Your life will be better. What we always tell people is there's no guarantee your life following Jesus will be easy. That is true. But I can't even guarantee it'll be better. I actually think I can, right? Even in your suffering, it's better. Even in your, when we will perceive it as suffering or your giving up of your pride or giving up of your life. You're basically saying, my life is now at the service of other people. And and what you're saying to somebody who doesn't know Jesus is, so your life might not be better. But I'm telling you, I don't know that I'd want to live it the other way, because I watch people who live it, who say, I'm living for myself, and they're miserable.
Yeah.
Like, they act like they're not miserable. They'll tell everybody they're not miserable, but they're angry, and they're depressed, and they have no peace about them. They'll convince you that they do. They'll present as if they do, but it's a straw man. And so I guess that's kind of the point I was trying to get at is, you know, are God's principles for living without the promise of eternity, are they still the best life on offer here on earth, even though you're sacrificing for other people? And like, I think the answer is still yeah.
Yeah, I think they are, but I'm probably different maybe than you guys, because I'm pretty sure if there were no rules against some of these things, I'd be all over it.
I've had affairs
every other week.
Yeah. I mean, even if God said it's not what's best for you, it's not a sin, it's just not what's best.
Right. Well, because I do all kinds of things that I know are not best for me that aren't a sin right now.
Also true. I do that.
I eat French fries. I drink Diet Coke. I mean, I don't exercise like I should.
Yeah. Never mind. I'm in Dan's corner.
Yeah. I can say the only thing that keeps me like morally straight is I know there's a God and I love him and I want to honor him and there's an eternity. Otherwise, I'd probably flirt with all of it.
Yeah. Like, I guess that's the question, is that like, if you know, and maybe that's the difficult thing where we're trying to focus on, hey man, God has a design for your life and this is what's best. Uh-huh. And if you don't have this overarching thought of a long-term consequence. Well, actually, this gets into all the parables after Jesus talks about his return, and like the guy takes a long time to come back, and so they just end up doing what they want. Like, this is the actual thing. People have a very hard time holding on to long-term boundaries where they feel like they can get away with it, or the consequences maybe no one will know, or it doesn't matter to the person. Yeah, so maybe it is more difficult. I think you're right. I think ultimately you're right. Even if there wasn't a notion of a forever in heaven, if this was the only experience, God's design for it is still best. Mm-hmm. And I think we can say that even biblically, because Jesus says that his burden is light. And so regardless of the fact that you will retain a burden, it will be light and you will have his presence. And to those things being true, I think it's okay to say, look, your life will be better following Jesus, even in the short term.
I can definitely affirm that. I mean, yeah. I have lived, you know, largely by the principles of the scripture, and I'm so much happier for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a solid family. Everything's great, you know, all this stuff. But if I didn't, I don't know that I would have.
Yeah.
Just on my own.
Yeah.
Just because if it was a good advice.
Yeah, right. If cheating on your wife was like drinking 3 Dr. Peppers a day.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was all the more the consequence. Yeah. But you just, the thing is like, you know, it's not though, right? Like, God didn't be like, hey, by the way, commandment 7, no sugary drinks. He's like, look, something's going to take you out between the age of 60 and 90. I mean, if it's going to be sugary drinks for you, then that's what's going to happen.
It's going to be something else if it's not that.
Maybe you like to rock tobacco leaves straight off the plant, eat them. I mean, you know what I'm saying? He spoke to a lot of things, and like a lot of them are relational or heart issues, mostly relational human to human, and then relational him to human, you know? So even if you took the human to him relations out of the Ten Commandments, they're still relational, right? Like, if it was not a sin, but just frowned upon to kill people, you know, God's like, just don't. It's, you're not separating yourself from me. It's just not what's best. Like, his ingrained image into humanity, it doesn't take long to figure out that killing a guy is not right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, no one's like, your freedom should allow you to kill whoever you want, and I guess my freedom's just got to take it in the shorts. Like, no one agrees. No one, on a basic logic principle, there's no way, you know?
Go ahead.
I can look back on my marriage, right, and think of there's probably a couple times in my marriage where the only thing that kept me there was God saying, mm-hmm. you're going to stay there.
Yeah.
Because it would have been really easy to go like, and go a different direction.
Yeah.
Now, I am thrilled to death that I never did anything stupid.
Yes,
you
know? Right.
And I never acted on it. And I didn't even give myself like a second to think about it because there was a boundary. And I'm like, nope, you're just here. You made that choice. We're here forever.
Yep.
Maybe I'll die and go to heaven. I mean, everything's good.
And but, finally be free of you, woman.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and that sounds worse than it is. I mean, it's not like we had a terrible marriage, but you know, there's just moments where you're just like, I don't know. And I totally would have gone off a different yeah. direction if I didn't know. Nope. God said, don't do that. And so I obeyed him first. I obeyed him first. And then everything fell in line, which made a great life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say like there's probably the rare couple of which that has never been the case. But like I feel like most people have gone through it at least in a half a second thought to go, you know, I don't know.
I don't need this.
What I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to have to spend the effort to try to fix whatever all this crap is going on around here. Like, totally. I actually think it's unrealistic to have that not be the case. But, like, it's to your point, without – that's the value of this long-term someone – even in your – when you're not firing on all cylinders, God did it for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he put a boundary in to go, when you're not at your worst, he's going to keep you from being your – or not your best. He's going to keep you from being your worst.
I mean, like I'll just be honest. Like in one situation, it was just pure immaturity on my end. It was like, I'd like to go for a boy. We had two girls. I love my girls. Nothing wrong with having girls.
Yep.
But I thought, man, let's go one more time.
Yeah.
And it's like, nope. Mm. And I'm like, well, I bet there's someone out there who would.
Right.
You know, I mean, it goes through your mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, that's not how it's done.
Not how it works.
I mean, it worked for Abraham. No, not really. But, you know, it goes back to obedience. It's like, you just shut up, Dan. Just shut up.
That's right.
Sit down and shut up. No one asked you.
That's the thing. It's like, what a gift, right?
Yeah.
To have a built-in boundary.
Because I'm an idiot.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the thing, is like the Enoch never gets – well, never, but like it's harder to quantify the things he saved you from, right, that aren't so obvious, right? Like where you didn't have to already be one foot in the casket and he pulled you out to life, and then you see the whole thing differently. You know, but like you – sometimes it gets lost in the conversation that you never stepped in the casket or you never had to go through those things. And like because of those, you were in a position to actually be able to help other people because you didn't have one foot in the grave already and were throwing your own life away. And like these are all just amazing gifts that like it's just hard for a human with a very short memory to hold on to.
Yeah. I've had that actually where someone was like relaying a fight they had with a boyfriend or like a spouse or something like that. And they're telling the story and in the back of your mind you're like, how in the flying heck did it get to this point? Like I don't even understand. There's like 15 things to sort out in there, and you're like, how did items 1 through 5 even make it where someone didn't go, oh, you know what? We should do something different with what we're doing. And like it becomes so hard to sort out people's domestic situations when they have no grounding of Jesus because it's really just a catfight between two people with opinions.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, they're grown adults. They can have their own separate opinions if they want to. And unless they have a fealty to Jesus, I don't own them or conquer them, and I'm not the ruler. So like I can't decree that they should think about – and they don't – like half the time they don't want to think about things differently. They want – what was the phrase? They want their – it's due to their taste. Actually, this the article ended with a different quote by Blaise Pascal, and it said, people almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. They start with what they wanted, and then you justify it as you go. And you know what's interesting is if you're talking about Nietzsche and you're talking about Blaise Pascal, these are not this century people. Like, so whatever this is, like people's different flavors of whatever they chose and were drawn to over the last 200 to 300 years, I mean, it's not new. Philosophers of the day recognize the same problem.
Yeah, it's the same human problem as it always has been.
Yeah. All right. There was another article I thought – actually, I wanted to call this to attention – again, it's kind of one of those things, kind of like reminding that all the stories were like, hey, God has been faithful. And so there's a story in the Christian Post said Christian mother, children ordered by court to convert to Islam. And so there's basically an Iraqi law that says if someone in your family converts to Islam, then the rest of your family has to convert to Islam. And so this lady's mom, her husband died. So her dad passed away. She got married to a new dude who was a Muslim, and so she converted to Islam. And now the law in Iraq is that this lady and her children have to convert to Islam, like they're required. And the husband is too. Like she could, like otherwise they can't stay married. And so she, the lady and the children have to do it. The guy, by law, the guy doesn't have to do it. But if he doesn't do it and she does, they can't stay married anymore. And so it was just an interesting, it was an interesting thought. I didn't know where there was such like the formality of this, where a lady is trying, like, is a Christian. She's been a Christian her whole life. To love and serve Jesus, and she is provided no particular choice, no choice in Iraq. She has to convert to Islam under punishment of prison. Like her children could be taken away and she could be sent to jail. And so I don't know if there's any particular discussion there. I just it reminds you that your existence, like, this is completely foreign to me. There's no chance of any of this happening at all in my life. And there's people who are having to deal with kind of stuff like that who need our our prayers, and where the story and message of Jesus is sustaining and powerful in her lives in a much different way than the story and message of Jesus is a sustaining thing in my life. Yeah. So anyway, just I just wanted to share it just for kind of round out perspective. Okay. Blah 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 blah. Now there's another Carl Lentz has a podcast. I don't care.
Carl Lentz.
He's the Hillsong, the New York Hillsong guy.
Oh, yeah.
who got canned for his again, just like Tony Evans and Brian Houston and everybody else, some sort of sexual dalliances. And he came, the one thing that came up in the article was that, like, when he let go, he's like, he admitted to an affair with a lady, and they're talking in the podcast and he's like, well, no, I mean, it wasn't one, it was like a lot. It's like, okay. Yeah. And it's curious where people I will say this. One of the cautions in the article is his description. So this was – sorry, for context, in case you're listening and you don't remember. The Hillsong, New York, Carl Lentz was the pastor. He had grown the church like crazy big. It was pretty righteously big. And he was a very – kind of like hipster church pastor. And anyway, at the kind of the height of that – He came under some extreme scrutiny around some affairs and then some domineering behavior, similar to the charges that Mark Driscoll had, although Driscoll didn't have any of the sexual stuff. So anyway, he resigns and he's like off the radar, but not for super long. Like, he got hired on, we talked about this a while back, he got hired onto a church as like the evangelism pastor or something like that, 6 months or so ago. And I don't know, it's not clear he's even still with the church. But anyway, he's on this podcast and he said the lady interviewing him goes, hey, why don't you answer me this? Why couldn't you just keep it in your pants? I'm like, it's a great question.
Good question.
And it was the interesting response. He's like, it wasn't sexual so much as it, like, I come from a place of kind of like extreme brokenness. And he goes, like, there's multiple places where you can see this, because he goes, it wasn't just affairs. Like, I was domineering and I was abusing pain medication and blah, blah, blah. Now, I do think there's a reality often with men that, like, I mean, it is sexual for sure. But it's not always that. It's not always just that. But men are notoriously difficult at expressing themselves. They couldn't tell you what it was. They probably feel like, to be honest, like, I think a lot of men are seeking, you think they're after the shallow thing, and they certainly want the shallow thing. But they also want people who, like, adore them and people who think highly of them and build them up and think and find that they matter. And so it gets harder the longer you're in a marriage. Sometimes you're less impressed with the person that's around you. Sometimes they're not particularly impressive. Sometimes they gave up. Sometimes, like, you forget what enamored you to someone. And because you got – kind of like the thing we were talking about with Jesus in a culture, because you got used to it, you forgot that you didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
And that often happens as a marriage. You start nitpicking stuff about people. It's actually you were thinking the when we were talking about in your marriages and stuff, and like, it's pretty normal every once in a while to go, I don't know, man. I remember a time in my marriage where I was so thankful because I was mad. I was like, whatever it was, I'm like, it felt like, I don't know, I just don't feel like anybody cares about me around here. And I lined up all the things. Maybe I said this recently. I lined up all the things that I was all but hurt about. And actually, I mean, some of them are probably legitimate, actually. But then I thought, like, is it possible that your wife feels the same way? Like, hey, you feel underappreciated. Do you appreciate your wife? You feel like she's ungrateful for all that you do. Have you ever told her how grateful you are for all the things she does? Yeah, but she sucks right now. I'm like, maybe. But, like, yeah. Grand scheme of things here, do you not have a good woman? Does she not care for you and love you? And like, does she have room to grow? Of course. And so, but like, it was that kind of thing where, you know, none of that would ever get prompted for something shallow. Would never leave my marriage for something shallow, but I would be reevaluating it for something deep like that. Like, I'm underappreciated. And then you find out that, like, okay, maybe some of that's true and needs to be worked through, but like, also idiot over here.
Right.
And I need to go do something about it. Why don't I start there and make sure I feel real good that we're tucked up and that I did my best? Because right now I'm not making it.
Oh, what a wretched man I am.
Yeah, right. And so anyway, I think there is something to that. And I think there is evidence that, like, hey, that's not the only thing. But I am cautious, I think, at the thought that, like, oh, it just came out of a place of brokenness. Well, yes, and disobedience. Because people can be broken. People can have a break in their life. People can have a mistreatment. People can have all kinds of things and not do all the things. And so we risk painting over something that requires work. Not because I necessarily want to like grind somebody down on any particular sin or another. And I think recognizing the source of the things is important. But like, if you don't recognize that even when the chips are down and your thing is rough, that like there's a part where you have to still say no, or know when you're in the frame of mind to say yes to something you shouldn't, then you won't be able to fend that off the next time it comes. And so I think it's actually still important to go, yes, like it was from a massive place of brokenness. And disobedience. My will didn't hold up. I chose to do, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I think there is something, there's a repentance to that. And I think there's something still powerful about being able to say, not just, oh, because it acts like it was inevitable. If you are broken, then you will do this thing. And I don't think that's true. I don't think that's right. Otherwise, everyone would always do the same things. And so it did just catch it that, it's not a whole story. I believe it's a true story. I just don't think it's a whole story. And I think it is valuable for freedom to have that notion of taking responsibility. Jesus will cover it regardless, but like the action of taking responsibility and knowing your role in it and the actions that you took in it help you recognize the path the next time you come on it, as opposed to going, brokenness made me do it, which is a risk.
Yeah, I think it's... It's impossible. I don't know if it's possible. It's not fair to think that everything that is true about Jesus is going to be true in your pastor's life all the time.
Yeah.
Right? But I just have a hard time. Like, you'd have to be so separate from the work of the Holy Spirit and the presence of God in your life to continue the double ruse for so long. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I've screwed up. You know, like I've had sin catch up to me, or I've made a mistake, and like I don't even know if I could teach youth group that Wednesday. I'm like, I am not the right person for this right now. Not like God's waiting out a penance for me, or he's got this big list of things I need to do. He already set me up to be a teacher in that particular arena, and my sin does not disqualify me from that. But there's some times where, like, I'm not in the right – my heart's not in the right place. My mind's not in the right place. I got to find someone else to fill in for me. I can't go do this. I can't go represent Jesus in front of people today. Not because of my brokenness, but because, like, I'm not asking the Spirit to be a part of it. I'm not asking God to show up to his people. And, like, because it freaks me out.
Yeah.
I don't want to preach the gospel as Mike Foost. He kind of sucks. You know what I'm saying? Like, he'll bow down to the closest person next to him that makes things hard. And he'll go, all right, well, we don't need to fight. Let's just be friends. You know what I'm saying? I've met the guy. He will bend. Jesus doesn't do that. And so, like, you don't need a me in there, right?
Yeah.
You need a guy that's going to go, not me, but you, right? Christ in me. Let's do that.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, I can understand that, like, to be fair to pastors, they're just humans, right, with a specific job that God has called them to do. But there's something a little bit disingenuous to be like, look, I was just broken. Well, why don't you step away from the pulpit 5 years ago, dude?
Right.
And get healing.
Yes.
Right. Why don't you be like, look, I'm not in the right place. I need time with God. I need time to recharge. I gotta get out of here. But you showed up every Sunday giving these fiery sermons with like lots of actions and attitude. You're not morose. You know, you're not up there like barely phoning it in because you can't barely hold it together. You're up there running the Actors Guild, you know? And so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt here because
running the actor's
game. Well, I just want to, I don't know how you could be so far away from God and still show up on a stage and fire. You know what I'm saying? What a danger.
And that's whether as a church of, 40 or 40,000.
Right.
We hear the names of the big guys, but there's guys in the little pulpits too that are doing the same things. I don't know how you sleep. I don't know. You're not perfect, but if you're in rebellion,
no.
There's an arrogance to it.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, if you're leading a group of people, then do so through all the things. To your point, if you're sensing, you're like, boy, I'm feeling rough. I'm my mind is going places it shouldn't. I'm a risk to these people around me. Then come say that. Hey, everybody, here's what I'm going to demonstrate what it looks like to you on the thing to do. I'm going to pull myself out of this right now. The elders are going to do all the stuff and help me find what it takes to get me to work through this. No, I've not done anything I shouldn't, but I can smell it.
Yeah, I need a renewal of my mind. Yes. That's what I need.
Yeah, and frankly, fellas, you look out on the people and you go, this is what I would expect for you to do. This is what I would have told you to do. Why wouldn't I do the same thing? Not I persevered through all this risk to me, to you, to the people that I'm harming. For what? Because God needed you? Come on. There's an arrogance to it. And some of it I think is not particularly arrogance always carries a connotation that you're trying to be arrogant. Sometimes you don't realize that you're coming from a place of arrogance. But every Monday morning, you should just write it on your calendar, things to pray about. I am not as necessary as I believe myself to be in most things. But where God has made me necessary, help me give my life to that. And frankly, as a leader, you lead even through your troubles, not like in ignorance of them, but through them as an example, as a way to help other people who are going through similar things. No one is more powerful in ministry than someone who sees the thing you're going through because they went through the same thing and they know what it's like to walk on the other side of it. And so be that, for heaven's sakes. That's a failure. It's a massive failure of leadership because you're counting the wrong thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of different, I've seen different sections of Christianity look at this approach different, right? Some people are like, you're just going to bounce from glory to glory to glory to glory to glory, right? Your life is just going to go from one glorious thing to another. But the other half, or the other folks that I get probably most of my teaching stuff from is you can't grow that way. That's not how growth happens, right? And so, even when you're at your worst, when the Bible says that, his perfected in your weakness. What is it? What's his blank is perfected in your weakness? I'm losing it. Anyway, it's biblical. I'll think of the word.
His strength, isn't it?
I think it's his strength, but I don't. Yeah. But I didn't want to say it because I pulled it out wrong.
That sounds too easy.
Yeah. His strength is perfected in your weakness. And that's straight biblical. So it's hope for people where things just look like a garbage dumpster fire at the moment. And you're like, look, this is what, when you can approach him in your weakness and then go, this is how we grow. When you realize where you're at and then watch his strength show up, that's where a growth will happen, right? But if you're just bouncing from glory to glory to glory to glory, your weakness never showed up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So his strength was not necessary. And that seems like an odd thing to hope for, to want for, right? But the truth is, unless you see it in its truth, either because outside circumstances have put you there or the Holy Spirit just put it on you that you need to realize that you are not a key to this equation. You are a loved part of the equation, but you are not the fulcrum on which it runs, right? Well, how much hope does that sound like? That sounds great. That means that with my faithfulness his faithfulness does not hinge on mine, right? His faithfulness to the thing that he does does not hinge on my faithfulness to him because he's an amazing God, right? And so some people will say, you're not as key to that equation as you think, then you go, well, what good am I? What use am I? Who am I in the kingdom of God? And I'm like, I hear that and I go, the Lord will do, regardless of me or not me. I would love to be a part of it. But if it ain't going to be me, my hope gets to shine because today I screwed up. Does that mean that all the things that I had on my list to do for his kingdom, the relationships I was building or the Bible I was reading or the study I had started or the prayer I was trying to memorize or whatever crazy thing you want to be doing, when you screw that up, he doesn't take it out on the works that you were doing, because his faithfulness is not contingent upon yours. And so that sounds like a hopeful statement to me, where I think, you know, people in a certain position will be like, I got to keep doing this. I'm a key to this whole operation. My name's right on the sign. You know what I'm saying? I really got to do that. The people are coming to hear me talk about the gospel.
Yeah, you know, actually, based upon that quote you were talking about, it made me think that then the reality would be that if you do not have weakness, then you are running without his strength. You know what I'm saying? Like if his strength is demonstrated, his power, like the King James says strength, I think some of the modern translations say power, is perfected in your weakness. But like without your weakness, if you are not finding a place where you recognize a weakness, or it's where you're walking in humility, I think is ultimately what it's getting at, then you're running on your own steam. It's not his strength that is being perfected in you. And like, what a serious risk to you, to the world around you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you're listening to Life from the Path. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us so far. You can give us a feedback on the Life from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. We would love to hear from you. And we appreciate, hey, the podcast numbers are rocking. Thank you guys for listening. It's always surprising to me. I always expect our listens to be in the dozens, and it continues to be in the hundreds. Hundreds.
There you go.
And that's at least just for the straight podcast listens. It's not counting like YouTube and stuff. So when you guys,
like, it's almost 1,000.
At times it gets close to it. Most of the time it hangs around 500 or so per week. And then obviously the episodes will accumulate more and more stuff as they go. But like anyway, that's cool. That's humbling. I know some of you guys are like starting and stopping it in anger, and it counted at like 75 plays, but really you just hate the show. but thanks for them numbers.
We'll take that.
Bobby, appreciate it. Okay, Mike, let's give some advice.
All right. Dear Life from the Path, I have a friend who, anytime we ate out, if a server tried to take her empty plate and others around her weren't done eating, would stick her hand out to prevent the server from taking her plate. She says it's rude to take a plate when others haven't finished their meal. I think it's rude for her to do that to the server. I have mentioned this to her only once, and we've been friends for 30 years. What do you think? about what?
I mean, as a guy who has been a professional dishwasher, mm-hmm. let them take the plate.
Yeah.
They need the plates.
Yeah, let them hand it over. Like, what the heck?
What are you doing with it?
Like, rude to who?
It has nothing to do. Yeah, it's not like people are like, oh no, she's done, I better hurry or whatever. It's like, no.
Dad, drink your water and shut up.
Someone else is hungry. They need that plate.
Around here. No, I don't. I mean, okay, there's a couple of things going on. One, no, this is not a problem at all. Two, if this is your friend of 30 years, like, first of all, what happened when you brought it up? I'm curious. Yeah. And is that the reason you didn't bring it up a second time? Or like...
I mean, they're still friends, so.
Yeah. Yeah, like, no, and never mention it again.
I'm done with you.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously can't be that close of friends. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just can't imagine if Boova had done the same thing. You'd be like, what are you doing? Just give the guy the plate. Yeah, right.
And it would come up the next time we were out, and I go, hey, you still doing that? Because you look like an ape.
Yeah, if you're going to embarrass me, we're going to go to the Bandit Burrito, because they got no plates. And I don't want to have to do this again.
See that table over there with hungry children? They're waiting for your plate.
That's right.
Man, that's weird. Okay. Yeah. All right, so our overall advice is, I mean, this doesn't seem to be...
Oh, wait a minute. No, she's the friend does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, bring it up again. Wow. So your friend is embarrassing everybody.
All right, Secular says, I don't think your friend is rude. According to Emily Post, when a server removes someone's plate before everyone has finished eating, it can leave the impression that those still eating are holding things up, and those who are done can be left feeling that they rushed the meal.
Maybe they have a low self-image.
Also, you are holding things up. I'm finished. We're not leaving because you're still eating. That is correct.
Yeah.
It's not meant to imply a feeling of burden or guilt either way, but like, I am done and you are not done.
What kind of person is so easily pacified that they're halfway through their salad and they look over at someone else's plate, which is empty, but still there, and goes, well, thank goodness I'm not holding this up.
Right.
Ted's still licking the sauce. It's stupid.
I'd feel bad if that plate was gone.
Yeah, right.
But as it is, we're good.
This is weird.
I mean, it even facilitates the conversation. Like, my goodness, Carl, you really plowed through that. Hungry much? Like, oh, I haven't eaten for days, blah, blah, blah. Tell a story. This is dumb.
It is dumb.
Yeah.
Why don't you eat some of the butter tabs while you're waiting? You know what I'm saying?
You know, so I'll tell you this. I never drink so much water than when I'm out, like, for work stuff. People go out for drinks, and I don't drink. And so, like, I'm just sitting there pounding water. Because there's not, like, people do it because they got something to hold while they're trying to facilitate these conversations. And, like, I mean, I pee 55 times because of the amount. People taking it easy because it's expensive booze. And I'm over there just wailing away on water all night.
Look at me.
But, like, it would be super awkward if I didn't have anything. If there were nothing there and I didn't have something to drink, it would feel weird. But, like, it's not like they're taking your whole kit. Like, drink the water, order a coffee after the meal, have the free bread. There's plenty of options of which this plate is not part of the situation.
Yeah.
Or if you're really desperate, bring a paper plate with you, and they'll take your plate, and you can set it out there, and you can pretend.
Just keep putting another one there, and just be like, I'll keep this one. Like, you can't unplate me. I can't have this.
The old keeping the peace plate.
I've never looked around a table and been bullied by somebody's plate being missing.
No.
But I also eat real fast, mostly because I get bored. Like, I will literally stop. I don't know the last time I've stopped eating because I was full. I stop eating because I'm just tired of doing it. I find eating to be extremely boring. I don't eat more than like 5 or 6 minutes, and then I'm out. Okay, here we go. Last one.
Okay.
Dear Live, from the path, I'm divorced. My ex-husband has a girlfriend and has just gotten engaged. Mm-hmm. We have two sons, 23 and 20, and they are going to their father's wedding in 4 months. I'm kind of annoyed that they're going, and I'm not sure what an impact this will have on my life as the ex or how my boys will feel. Advice? What?
I mean, your boys want to go. Isn't that why they're going?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what an impact this will have on my life. Well, I mean, I don't know. These are grown kids. Are you still trying to tool Christmases together or what? I don't understand. Like, you got divorced. Your kids are in their early 20s. Like, I don't know how, I don't think it's going to impact your life at all. I mean, unless they try to, is she worried they're going to, like, start to do holidays over there? Because, like, as a single man, ain't no one going over a single man's holiday celebration. You know what I'm saying? Like, you always go where there's a mom cooking or somebody's making a dinner or put any time and effort into it. Even dads that know how to cook, they can't put a shindig together for nothing. And so, like, they're probably never going to their dad's Christmas morning. No one's fighting for the, for the big things. So, in either case, it just feels like that you might be worried about stuff that is not important at all.
Yeah. It's just an unfortunate situation. I mean, it comes with divorce and remarriage. I mean, it's hard. You just go with it. I mean, there's nothing you can do. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, if God hadn't called it a sin, Dan would be doing it right now.
That's right. I'd have 6 or 7.
Yeah. Yeah. I think... So, wait, what was the question?
There's nothing. It was a story. And then I'm not sure what impact this will have on my life as the ex or how my boys will feel. Advice?
Yeah. You're going to be jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew this was coming. It's unfortunate, the impact of the divorce. Like, your kids, I mean, what impact might, it might be great. I don't know. Maybe this is a great person. I don't know. I can understand being upset.
I mean, it's got to feel weird. I don't know. I've never done this. I can't speak to it.
Yeah.
But, like, if you started a life with somebody and said you were going to do these things, and, like, then you decided, that's it, we're not going to do life together anymore, I believe it would be very difficult to see someone starting a life with someone else.
Definitely.
I don't even know how I... See, once again, Enoch, it's one of those things that, like, I will not experience. And so I should be thankful every day ahead of time that God has never... Like, I'm just not going to go through this.
Yeah.
And so, what a gift that is. There's been so much divorce around me and, like, around everybody, mm-hmm. and you have to watch it just terrorize and tear families up and create nothing but animosity and trouble and broken. And then I forget on my worst days that, like, I don't have to walk through that because godly principles, you know?
Yeah, although I guess it's interesting is that, like, regardless of how you're going to feel about it, like, you can't do anything. So there's, like, nothing to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, hey, if it's going to be rough, yes, it's going to be rough. But, like there's not an action to take. You got to prepare your – I would prepare yourself, I guess. But, like, there's not like someone could go, oh, you know what you should do? Bust that thing up or tell your kids not to go. Like, none of that stuff is relevant. Yeah. And so I think it's right to prepare yourself and go, this is going to be tough. Try to approach it as graciously as you can. There's no value or victory in being in making like odd comments about it, in poisoning your kids with it, in being passive aggressive at your ex-husband or whatever. Like, you're going to have to do your best to acclimate to this thing. Because like whatever the reality is that you thought you were going to have, you do not have it, and it's not coming back.
Yeah,
definitely.
All right. Secular says,
yep.
If it isn't too late, refrain from conveying to your sons your annoyance that they will attend their father's wedding. They belong there. Give them the chance to get to know the woman without trying to influence them either way. Remember, above all, that you are a person in your own right rather than just an ex. You are also still your son's mom. You have the opportunity for a happy, successful future if you don't allow bitterness to get in the way. I hope you will give yourself that gift.
Okay.
I mean, I don't hate that.
Yeah.
Although it does smack of, like, so I have been asking the AI a bunch of questions. And I find it way too affirming to whatever it is that I want to do.
Oh, yeah. It agrees with whatever you're posturing.
Yeah. And then like, I will argue back with it and be like, look, it can't be in my best interest to agree with me all the time. They're like, that's for sure. You definitely should have a opinion in your life to help you go point in the right direction. And I go, well, you're not that. You agree with everything I say. And then it says, yeah, you're right. I'm like, you just did it again. You agreed with my disagreement of your first agreement.
Yeah, man.
So anyway, the AI can't be trusted for good counsel. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, totally true. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. We appreciate you hanging out with us this evening, and I'm going to cut you loose, but I'm going to cut you loose to a tune called What Only You Can Do. It's a song that Mike wrote and released here within the last, I don't know, it's been a couple months, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can check it out. Just search for What Only You Can Do. The artist is Get the Goat. And if you remember, we had released a song called Get the Goat when we were trying to raise money to go to Ethiopia and buy goats for folk. And so that same artist has this tune out there. But go ahead and dig on it. It's available on all the platforms of which decent music is sold. So we'll leave you that to send the show out. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.
Back to you, do what only you can do.